Good morning. I'd like to call to order the special meeting of the Finance Committee, January 9th, 10 o'clock. Welcome, everybody. Mark, are you going to give us an update on the audit?
Sure. Let's start with that. So the audit, we've made some progress.
Can you please speak into the microphone, Mark? Thank you very much.
Okay, so we've made some progress on the audit. We have, and we talked about a little bit about the procedures to get to the finish line last meeting. So we've gone through the entire balance sheet of the audit, and we've got to a point where the district's general ledger and accounting records tie out, match up to the all the balances on the audited trial balance. And that's a big deal. And so then we shifted gears and we went down all the revenue line items. And we have got those reconciled and tied out to the audited trial balance. And we had a good call with the auditors talking about very specific items needed to wrap up the audit. So it's not a nebulous dollar amount that's in a clearing account that could be the combination of various issues anymore. It's just very specific items. And so you can see here on your list, I can go through them quickly if you have any questions. I can elaborate, but there were some just very minor differences here and there. We're talking like a couple hundred dollars here and there on a handful of accounts. And so we discussed those, and we're going to move forward on those because they fall well below any kind of materiality threshold. We reviewed a property tax assessment receivable balance. District staff, we went ahead and we tied that out actually to a receipt of property tax assessment in August 21. And so we talked with the auditors about, you know, hey, we think that this should be the balance. And so, and it's not a big difference, but it's one we're talking about. So we're going to go ahead and get that specific issue resolved, probably on a call later this afternoon that we have scheduled. Same with item C. There are 8 different general ledger accounts that account for our balance in LAIF. And there is just some relatively minor differences, and they mostly offset against each other in a couple of those accounts. And that's something that we'll resolve today on our phone call with the auditors, one way or the other, how that's going to be handled. And there were some old balances related to some developments years ago. And there are projects that have long been completed, and we had a good discussion with the auditors, and we're going to go ahead and clear those balances out because they really aren't relevant, meaningful balances anymore. So that's an entry that's going to get posted. And then we talked about, the final balances in net position. So net position for the district is its equity. It's its assets minus liabilities. And we have to talk through a couple of issues. There was definitely a prior year adjustment that's going to be posted for this audit, and you'll see that on the face of the financial statements related to some irrigation easements that were granted back in 07-08. And then it looks like there might be one or two other items in there, and we're going to talk about that on our call today and get that resolved, hopefully today. And then again, I talked already about, you know, we went through all the revenue accounts. There is one item related to property tax assessment revenue. And in this specific year, there were a couple of different, just very unusual things that happened with property tax revenue. There was a pretty sizable balance from outstanding unpaid property taxes over several years that was collected. And then there were some pretty hefty penalties on that and some interest related to that. And there was a lot of back and forth with how that was posted in the general ledger. And so I think that, in a combination with some of the accounting challenges we were having during the timeframe when all this was happening, I think created a possible discrepancy there, but we know exactly what it is. I've already talked to the auditors about it last week. They're looking into it, and again, this is a specific topic on our call this afternoon, so we should be able to get this resolved one way or the other. And just, you know, again, I know we've talked about, hey, there's this one item left, and it's $1 amount, but really that dollar amount was kind of a clearing amount, and there were a lot of journal entries and a lot of postings that were related to that. And, you know, the work that we've done over the last couple of months to kind of go through this and review it, we're going to post several journal entries to get the district's financials in shape and matching what the final audit is going to be. And at this point, and again, this should be pretty close to done. I mean, there might be a couple more resulting from the call later this afternoon, but that's 178 lines of adjusting journal entries. Okay, and so it's not insignificant. It's not an insignificant amount of work. And but hopefully, when those financials are issued, everyone will look through them and say, hey, you know, we know that a lot of work went into this, and this is a good, reliable, correct set of financial statements. So, next steps, again, we're going to have the phone call today, and then, you know, there's some internal process that the auditor, the partner there, has to go ahead and review the audit and sign off on it. Mimi and I will work on the district management's discussion and analysis part, which is really just a write-up of the final results of the year, and that'll go in the financial statements. And then there's just, you know, some administrative work to do the final prep on the financials and get them issued. Okay, so hopefully this is seen as good news, and that we're moving forward. It's not a nebulous item out there anymore. It's very specific items on a checklist that we're hopefully going to check off today on our call this afternoon.
Well, that's good news. Steve, you have any comments?
The only question I have is back on the front page, item B, so that ACH deposit in August of 2021 was applicable to the fiscal year that ended June 30, 2021. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And on the teeter plan, which is what the district's on, where you know, we don't collect penalties or go after homeowners for their property taxes, the county does that.
Mm-hmm.
The county then will just pay us the set amount that's the levy on all the homes that fall under our district, and then Sac County will pay us. I think in January we get 55%, and then we get 40% in May, and then there's like a final accounting at the county at the very end of the fiscal year, and then we get the remaining 5% payment, and that usually comes in July or August of the next fiscal year.
Thank you.
Amelia, do we have any comments?
I don't have any comments from the public.
Okay. Let's go to the next.
Very good.
Go to the next one. Reserves.
Okay, I'll kick us off on this one. All right, so as Mark described, we're very close to the completion of the 2021 audit, and I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into the history to look at the 1920 starting point. And in the handout, what you have is sort of an overview of how the district funds are structured. And that includes these five enterprise funds, water, wastewater, drainage, solid waste, and security. And really those funds are kind of like piggy banks, where you have your, whatever your starting point is, whatever income comes in, whatever operating expenses go out, and then you have your ending balance. And then that ending balance really across the board for those five constitutes the reserves, and then those are kind of split into different categories. And the three categories that are in play here are really capital assets, which is all the physical things, all the plant, physical plant and equipment. And those you can't spend very far, and in fact, those usually are declining in value as depreciation occurs unless you've made additional investments. And then the second category is a pot of money that's actually restricted for capital projects, and then the third would be this unrestricted bucket. And then it's really like 15 or 16 buckets. What I have here are six funds because I included admin. But so it's six times those three, right? So that's 18 different buckets across the board. And then I want to focus on the condition of those buckets. But first, I want to explain a little bit about that second category, the restricted for capital projects. Those are blown out a little bit at the bottom of this graphic to show that that money can be used for replacements, water augmentation, or capital improvements. And I don't want you to think about the numbers. I want you to think about the concept of these buckets, and they have beginning balances, they have a net activity level that results in an ending balance, and then you have the ability to spend that money in some way, shape, or form that's designated in part. Now, excuse me, the district has unrestricted and restricted. And unrestricted can be used for any purpose, and restricted can be used for those three items that are there, the replacement, water augmentation, and capital improvements. And our problem back that started way before 1920, but I'm looking at 1920 as kind of a starting point, is that our funds had negative balances. And there is a statute which we're trying to track down that is, we've heard reference to it but haven't been able to find the specific statute, that says that local government entities are not supposed to have operating fund balances that are in the red. And essentially with our unrestricted, that is our operating fund balance, that has been operating in the red since at least 1718. So these negative fund balances could be due to a variety of factors like lack of positive operations, excessive accumulated depreciation or excessive depreciation cost, incorrect job costing, or these excessively high indirect cost rates. It's all kind of in the past, you know, that stuff would require a deep dive into figuring that out. But regardless for that, what we want to do is work towards operating in the black, with positive positions in all these funds. So one thing that I referenced there is this restricted versus unrestricted. And I feel like the district's information about what is restricted and what is unrestricted has been a little bit muddied. There are certain things that are specifically restricted by code, by government code, and those include the connection fees. But then the district approved a an increase to $14 for reserve contributions for both water and wastewater back in April of 21 that went into effect in 21-22. And that appears to have been just board action that approved that. And maybe it was related to 218. I'm not seeing a direct tie to that, but that was, I believe, intended to help the district start to build back its reserves. So that $14 per month, if you look at the chart that says district reserves, and it's the one that has the green bands for each of the funds and also shows the red deficit situation for water, drainage, and security. Just below that, you see the balances for water and sewer for the capital replacements. And that, if you pull it all the way across to the total, that's almost $5 million there. We don't have a gap in sewer or wastewater, and we don't have any funds that are from that category in anything but water and sewer. So we propose utilizing a portion of that water funding that was designated by the board for reserve contributions to backfill that deficit, that negative balance in the water fund, so that we go forward with a truthful presentation about our situation. In reality, what's happening is that whatever that deficit is, it's being covered anyway by the reserves. But our goal for the long term is to actually end up with all of the difference between revenues and expenses going towards the building up of a reserve so that the district is on solid footing for the future when inevitably the PP&E is going to be aging and in need of replacement. And the restricted and unrestricted, there's, I think, a hard restriction on the water connection fees due to the government code. The reserve contributions of $14 per month per house, per water and per sewer lines, right? Those are definitely intended to be restricted to those two funds. But as far as being able to assist with the deficit in the unrestricted, I think it's not entirely clear in the language that was included in the authorization for that increase. And so because we think that there's a de facto utilization of the resources anyway, that this should be addressed. And we're talking specifically about the water right now because we have access to funding. There's no similar pot of money for drainage or security, which are also in the red. Drainage is a much smaller deficit of about 11K, and we can address that one after we get through all the other audits. We can see if 21-22 has any capacity there to address that, or 22-23 or 23-24. And then security, we recommend that that be addressed in out years as well if we end up adjusting the indirect cost rate after today's conversation. And so I think this gets us on a path of more truthful financial statements because you really don't even have those reserves if you have a negative in that same picture. And so this is, you know, kind of a rough picture of what the district's reserves are and how we propose just making a booking adjustment to get us out of the red on paper before we go into 21-22, since we have this opportunity with the length of time that's passed since 2021 was actually audited and closed out, or will be next, hopefully in the next week.
Do I understand correctly, Mamie, that the $1.2 million that you show in the red for water basically is overspending for operations against what our revenues were?
Yes, and that, yes. Yep.
So, as we proceed to complete audits for the interceding years between this year and the one that Mark's trying to wrap up today, mm-hmm. is it likely we're going to find additional shortages like this?
Quite possibly. And one of the factors that I mentioned there being the incorrect job costing, we found that the automated payroll processing system that the district has used since January of 2020 had as kind of an umbrella account for most of the operations staff water. And a lot of the water folks are actually split pretty evenly, water and wastewater. And so water, to a certain extent, was the de facto choice where they would just, you know, be automatically billed to that. And so we're working to change that in a proposed new system that we're moving towards. Excuse me. That will classify by position the wastewater and water contributions, so that won't happen. We could spend time going back and, you know, clarifying which people and which positions were actually, you know, incorrectly charged, but we don't really have a lot of time. And I think there's so much that was done poorly that my philosophy is let's look forward. Let's just get these things done.
We made those adjustments in this year, as I recall.
We're
reallocating
in 23-24. We're definitely always adjusting to make sure that it's right. And then when we get into the new system, it'll be, they had incredibly complicated drop-down menus with hundreds of different job descriptions. And so it was difficult for staff to actually identify which projects they were working on. So we're, part of our transition to another system is to simplify that and have it be more accurate.
And then your proposal is to transfer 1.265 and change from the 3.683 just to eliminate that deficit, correct?
Correct. And even the 3.683 includes a bucket that we can't touch.
Right.
So it's really the 1.796308 line item that is where we draw it from. So that would leave it a balance in the $400,000 range.
And that'll take care of this particular budget year. Is that an action that requires the board action or the committee, or can you do it with direction from this committee?
That's again another area that it's silent. You know, there's no real direction included there. So I don't know if you have any history, Director Pohl, about the requirements for that.
I think we wanted to increase the reserves, but we were not very specific about what pot was supposed to go in. And so I think we can make up our own mind. I would imagine in the future we need to change our reserve policies that the board would dictate what pots any reserve amounts would go into. And I like the idea of making sure that nobody can touch it except for a particular fund or maybe replacement of components. But in reality, a board could change that again if they wanted to. But I think the bigger goal was just to get some money in the pot to help us fund elements that needed to be replaced. So I'd be in favor of this change, but with a hope that eventually we put it into the policy as to what, and that probably a board decision to change the policy, but eventually get it into there, and then try to make that policy match the balance sheet as to what's the title of a line of the pot, and so everybody knows what, when you look at the line item, what it is, and it's similarly designated in the reserve policy, so it's easy to understand.
Yeah, and I would just add that the grand jury did suggest that the board, the district, should adjust its reserves policy, and the response that we provided in June was that we were going to do that, and we were waiting until we got through the audits to kind of figure it out. And so that's one thing. And, you know, we're getting there on the audits with this news today. But the other piece is that in looking at that policy, which actually hails from 2012, it does have a naming conventions that don't exactly line up easily to what we have here. So I think when we do get to looking at it, I think we have to be clearer about, you know, the nature of the restrictions and what is unrestricted, because I think it's important that the district not tie its own hands with regard to certain resources, but that it definitely have as a long-term goal building up resources so that all of the future PP&E is going to be there in perpetuity, you know, in a functional state.
So it sounds like Director Pohl and I both favor the recommendation that you've made to transfer this reserve money to eliminate this negative balance. I think just to be extra safe in terms of process and also in the interest of transparency for the community, I think we should make that an action item at our board meeting.
Okay.
Martin, I think? Or do you think we can do it without doing so?
I think we can, but I don't have a problem having the board weigh in. I mean, Their opinion is just as valid as mine, so.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem. You want to put it on the agenda?
Yeah, we can definitely put it on the agenda. I think as far as timing goes, you know, we're hoping to get towards finalization, but I would think that even with a board action on January, whatever it is, 17th or 19th, we would be able to get this included in the 2021 audit as a transfer, so that the 21-22 starting point shows us in the black. You know, so I think that's perfectly fine. It achieves our goals of just getting us into the black and operating with a more accurate presentation of the reality for the 21-22 start. And I know the 21-22 is historic, it's all in the past, but because those books have never been closed, right, we're dealing with two prior years. But that would put us, with a closure of 2021, into a position where at least the water fund is in the black.
Well, how narrow do you think the timing is on getting all these buy-offs on this audit? Would it be better for us simply to have this committee give you the direction to proceed and then present it to the board as an information item?
That would certainly be much cleaner. I think we're close. I think Mark is probably a little more cautious.
I was good with that originally, but
okay. Well, yeah. Let's do that.
Okay.
At least then it's out there for the board to have discussion, and again, for the community beyond whoever's in attendance today to see it.
Yeah.
That was my concern, but
okay.
If I don't want it in any way to slow down the progress on getting this audit completed.
Yeah.
So okay.
I appreciate that.
Good.
Okay.
All right.
And then, do you want that as a separate item, sir, or just in Mimi's report? The general manager report.
I think it makes sense just putting it in your report that pursuant to direction from this committee,
okay.
You made this change. And it really is, it's just a bookkeeping change.
Right.
There's no real movement of money per se. It's just a bookkeeping change.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So that's items 2 and 3. And the next item is the financial reports. And in December, and sorry, it's been a busy month, but in December we had our finance committee meeting and we discussed stratifying the district budget and expense reports by the following categories: operating, capital outlay, and debt reimbursement. And we did that, or that was advice that was provided, or direction provided by the board members, because the budget includes those different categories, the operating expense and debt, lumped into the operating budget for 23-24. And it presents, I think, a overstatement of the resources that are available for operating funds. And unfortunately, with the holidays and whatnot, we didn't actually get the stratification done. But we'll have that done by either the board meeting or the next committee meeting. But what you see here is a presentation just based on the six funds, the five enterprise funds and then administration. And that, looked at from that framework, shows an excess of revenues over expenses of $1.1 million. But I want to clarify about the need to stratify. And when we do the 24-25 budget, it will be stratified so that you don't have an operating budget that is including items of expense that really aren't available as part of the general operating expenditure. And I was brand new when our budget was prepared, and I wasn't as familiar with how the budget was structured. So I won't have that be part of the 24-25. But because it is currently just presented by the different fund codes, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that it's not an indication that there's $1 million residual for the 23-24 budget year, and that that's just a general caveat, right? Because this budget included about $1.6 million in capital reserve or capital outlay revenues and about $1.8 million in capital outlay, capital outlay expenditures, and then in like another million roughly of debt reimbursement. So those components are kind of intermingled in the funds with the 100, 200, 250, 260 presentation. But what we'll probably do next time is show the presentation by fund in addition to the expenditures by the actual OE costs and capital outlay and whatnot, so it's a little clearer about our net position. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mark to talk a little bit more about that picture.
Yeah, thank you. So just like Mimi said, there's $743,000 in the revenue section here that's restricted revenue, and it's just not available for regular operations. And then, as Mimi said, there's $1.88 million in the budget for capital improvements, another $425,000 for water studies. And between those two line items, if we look year-to-date, there's still a potential $1.8 million out there that hasn't been spent yet. So when you're looking in terms of the bottom line net activity total, just it's important to keep those factors in mind.
Is this the page that you're discussing?
It is, yeah. Okay. And those items that Mimi mentioned and that I just highlighted are actually highlighted on that report.
Okay.
One thing that we did add on here that I know was a request last time was just what an allocation of admin overhead would look like, and that's in the bottom section there. And those are based on the current indirect cost allocation rates that I guess have been in place for several years since 19.
Okay.
18-19, those allocation rates?
I think it was
20.
19-20?
2020. 2020.
Since 2020,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, it seems like you're aiming toward to resolving the issues that we presented last time. And not quite there yet, but it sounds like we're going to get there. So that's great.
Yeah, every day we're making progress.
Yeah.
So we're moving in the right direction.
Okay.
Mark, in your presentation earlier and at the bottom of the page, you indicated that our property taxes usually come in three installments and that 55% of that annual revenue is received in December. Yet I note on the next page, we're only showing 50% of the property tax having come in.
Yeah, so good point there. And for the presentation here, we're just showing the property tax revenue on a straight line basis. So
okay.
The money's coming in different chunks, but
all right.
Yeah, we're just straight lining it across the year. So and that means we've gone through 6 months and there's 6 months reflected, so half.
Okay.
I like that. It gives us month to month, it gives us a better feel for where we're really at.
Right. Rather than seeing the full 800 and thinking, oh, we might go up from there. It's
right.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Nina, are you doing this?
Yep. I'll kick this one off. So this is an item about something called the other post-employment benefits, also called OPEB. And OPEBs are governed by an IRS code, Section 115, and that was established in order to allow, I think, nonprofits and governmental entities, but it might be inclusive of for-profits, but it's to enable entities that have obligations for post-employment benefits to be able to establish an investment fund and then allow those earnings to grow tax-free so that the obligations can be paid for. And since about 2011, the district has had its OPEB with PARS, which is a private investment company, and we currently have a balance of over $2.5 million. And I know we have Mike Martell in the audience, and he's asked us with a PRA request that's still outstanding, the one that's still outstanding, I should say, about what our current unfunded liability is. And we only have the liability back to 2019 because some documentation about our obligations for current and retired staff were not produced for the actuarial company in 2021, 22, 23. So those have now been provided to them, and we're waiting on them. But we expect that it'll be somewhat higher than $2.5 million. And that obligation is something that the district has not been making contributions toward for the last few years. I think we found that the last contribution to this trust was back in 2020. And we also have been looking at the costs of this particular trust manager relative to other ones that are out there. And back in 2007, I believe, when the IRS changed this law, the state kind of responded in kind and thought that a publicly funded trust manager would be beneficial to all the local governments in the state. And so they created this special division, which is called sort of clumsily CERPT, which is the California Employers Retirement Benefit Trust. So it was a separately created division within CalPERS. It's not the same pot of money of the CalPERS account, but this is housed within CalPERS, and the intention is that it serve as a reasonable resource for local governments that have OPEBs. And we found that there's at least a $10,000 per year savings on fees with this CERPT versus with PARS, and their returns are fairly equivalent. For example, we have $2.5 million in our current trust, and the PERS rate is 10 basis points, which is like a 0.10% charge per year, which is roughly $2,500. And most recently in June, we were charged $14,800 by PARS, in addition to what are sort of invisible fund fees, depending upon which funds the resources are invested in. And they might be in, you know, 5 or 20 different funds. And those funds have embedded fees that you don't really have the ability to see. So making an apples-to-apples comparison kind of difficult. The PERS program is not a for-profit entity, so there are no embedded fees. There's only that 0.10% off of your assets. So right off the bat, we'd be saving $10,000, which would help us to reduce that unfunded liability, you know, by $100,000 in 10 years at least. And so our recommendation is that we change from the for-profit PARS to the nonprofit CERPT and move our assets over to that entity. And that requires board approval. So we'll actually be looking for a recommendation from the committee to actually take that to the board in a couple weeks.
Well, personally, any way we can make more money is better for the district. So I think we ought to present it to the board for review.
I concur.
Okay.
Okay, I'll add that to the agenda.
Okay, so next up, I believe, is the 24-25 budget, which we're hoping to present in true draft form in 2 months at the March committee meeting. And we're right now sitting down with different units to talk about their 23-24 budgets and their needs for 24-25. And then we've also been soliciting data from regional water providers who've increased their rates over the years to be able to compare those to any proposed increases that we will have or we may have. And so that whole effort is ongoing over the next 2 months while we prepare to bring something to the committee and then to the board for the 24-25 fiscal year, which is, you know, a scant 6 months away. A big piece of this is the indirect cost rate. So staff has also been developing alternative methodologies to guide the distribution of administrative costs. And hopefully it would be one that more closely aligns with the administrative resources utilized by different units. Administrative cost distribution methodologies are often referred to as both indirect cost rates and administrative cost rates, and the district paid an outside consultant to create an indirect cost rate in 2020, but staff has extensively reviewed this rate and determined that there's room for improvement in this approach. And so we have a proposed revision to the indirect cost rate for 24-25 that Mark will go into now. And there's nothing that would preclude us from, you know, applying it for 23-24 as well, if the committee and the board are so inclined. It does have a ripple effect, because again, when you're taking all the administrative costs and distributing them across the various funds, if you're going to reduce the burden on one, you're going to increase the burden on somebody else, right? It's a zero-sum game. But that said, one of the other things that we've been trying to do is to reduce the overall administrative cost bucket. We consolidated the accounting manager and the director of admin into one position, and that created a savings of about, all in, probably with benefits, $200,000 for the year. We've also proposed switching from our current pay automated payroll provider to a different one, and that has a savings of $30,000. I have a whole list of all these savings that I'll get out there. But the goal of that is to make the administrative unit lean and maybe not so mean, but to make sure that we don't have excessive administrative burdens on the actual enterprise funds that are providing the services to the community. So that's part of the goal, and then also to calibrate more accurately the portion of the administrative costs that should be assigned to each of the different units. And I'll pass it to Mark on that note.
Okay, thank you. So you can see on the first page in front of you, and then up on the screen there, it's just an overview, and it's an overview of a potential recalibration of the indirect cost rates, and all the numbers here are using the fiscal year 23-24 budget numbers. And then it's a comparison to what that indirect cost rate currently is, as reflected in the 23-24 budget, and then we've got the increases or decreases and across the board. And so what we did is we went ahead and we looked at how are the different operating areas using administrative overhead resources? And we took two different approaches. One, we looked at HR and payroll, which are primarily driven on the number of employees, right? Or FTEs, full-time equivalent employees. And so for all the operating funds, all the enterprise funds, we just took a look at FTEs, and we peeled off HR and payroll, and we allocated those expenses strictly based on FTEs, okay? Then for everything else, and Amelia, if you scroll down to the next page,
sure.
We kind of use this calculation. It's like a weighted average. And you call it complexity of operations, or, you know, significance of operations. The complexity of operations is I think what we have noted in there. And basically we took a look at the different funds, the different operating funds, enterprise funds there, and we looked at, okay, well, how much property, plant, and equipment do they have? And that's net investment in capital assets. That's that first box on the far left. And, you know, when you have property, plant, and equipment, you have these complex machinery and these complex plants to operate in and maintain this equipment, that takes a lot of work. That takes a lot of oversight. That takes a lot of the bills that come in to get paid, a lot of the decisions that need to be made on a day-to-day basis. That generates, you know, some admin burden. And then kind of in that vein, total expenditures. Total expenditures for each one of these enterprise fund areas is certainly indicative of the size of the operation.
Excuse me, Mark, I don't think we have that page in our packet, do we?
Oh, you know, it's not a page two in there?
Oh, it's on the back. I'm sorry.
It's on the back. Okay, thank you.
I just had to switch the page.
Okay.
Sorry.
No problem at all. And so that's indicative of the size of the operation, right? And the bigger the operation, that lends itself to more administrative burden being pulled in that direction. And so those are really, we weighted those each 45%. You can see the percents up above each category. Because those are really big drivers, and they're indicative of, hey, this is the size and complexity of the operation that's going on here. And then beyond that, we've got restricted net assets. And we just had a presentation on restricted funds and restricted net assets. And there's definitely some complexity and some additional work that needs to go into that on the accounting side of the house and on the management side of the house to make sure that those funds are being used appropriately and they're being tracked appropriately. And then again, FTEs just in general, you know, and we did do a direct allocation of HR and payroll costs based on FTEs, but then in general, the more employees you have, generally that could take up more of the admin burden. So we weighted a portion on FTEs. And so coming up with that calculation, that was also part of it. So when you flip back to that first page, and Amelia, if you scroll back up, so the methodology that we use to derive this recalibrated rate that could potentially be the new rate going forward, it's got two factors playing into it. One is the allocation of HR and payroll solely based on the number of FTEs in each area, and then it's got the allocation of all the other costs based on that complexity of operations weighted average table that we just looked at. And so if we take a look, and I think it's really good to start with the far right column, which is where we are today. And if we look at where we are today, the indirect cost rate that's currently being used as a percentage of operating expenses for each fund, okay? And you look at, for instance, Fund 500, which is security. Under the current indirect cost rate, the amount of overhead allocated to security is equal to 51% of its operating expenses.
That number looks familiar to me.
Yeah. So you know, just and then you look at the other operations. Water, it's 24%, which is Fund 200. Fund 250 is sewer, 36%. Solid waste, Fund 400 is 38%, drainage, Fund 260 is 38%, and then solid waste, Fund 400 is 3%. So then if you go just to the left one column, that would be the recalibrated indirect cost rate that we just discussed. And this is a look at if we were to use that recalibration of the indirect cost rate, this is the new or the recalibrated costs of overhead allocated to each fund as a percent of their operating expense. And so if you look at that one, water fund would be 33%, the sewer fund would be 39%, the drainage fund would be 30%, the solid waste fund would be 6%, and then security fund would be 23%. Okay, and then if we were to scroll two pages down,
sir,
and then I'll open it up. So this is a look again at, this is that financial budget to actual that we put out earlier where we had the overhead costs allocated out to the funds on the bottom. And if we were to do this recalibration, this is how the numbers would shake out versus, you know, the numbers that we presented up to this point in time. So you could see, I'm going to pull mine up here, so you could see the security, for instance, results from operations without any admin costs allocated was 71,000 revenue over exceeding expense. And then when you do the admin allocation under the current method, it's got a deficit of $170,000. Under the recalibrated way that we just discussed, if we look at the admin overhead allocation, it would be a deficit of $19,000.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know that this is necessarily the, you know, the final version of the indirect cost rate. I mean, that's obviously open for discussion, but this is just an example of what we feel is the need to maybe revisit the indirect cost rate and come up with a recalibrated method of allocating those costs.
And Mark, just to clarify, that 119 and the 19 negative, that's just for the 6 months ending December 31st.
That is just the 6 months. That's okay. So that would be actual operations, right?
But you've already allocated the full 25,000 property tax transfer, which is an annual amount.
I did do that, yes. So okay. Yes, very good. So for this presentation, yes, I went ahead and made that allocation.
And so if we were to look at that on the same basis as the others, that would increase the net shortage by 12,500.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you explain the consultant's philosophy that created the rates, the allocation we have now, versus your philosophy?
Sure. So the consultant's methodology appeared to be heavily weighted on headcount. And so when you've got a department like the security department that has numerous employees staffing the gates, and I think at the time that this cost rate study from the outside consultant was done, I believe there were more employees in the security department
than
there
currently are. At least three more, yeah.
Right. So if you just go on headcount, security has one of the bigger headcounts at the district.
Right.
So I believe that was part of why those costs were heavily skewed that direction.
Mark, did you find any specific documentation that established that was the basis for that allocation? Because when I've asked previously what staff was able to locate initially, and this was many, many months ago, before either you or Mimi were here, I got the numbers and saw the increase that had been proposed at that time, but there wasn't, at least they weren't able at that time to find much documentation to demonstrate the rationale. Have you found something since, or is that sort of speculation?
No, so I have seen a PowerPoint presentation that rate was based on. So that's what I've seen.
Okay, well, that's the same thing I saw. I just didn't see it clearly providing a rationale.
And I would say that it is kind of silent on that. You have to kind of infer that's
right.
It's based
right.
on the headcount.
Because right.
there's nothing that states this indirect cost rate is structured, you know, in this way. It's just, I don't know if there was another report that was provided in addition to that PowerPoint, but so far all we've had is that PowerPoint.
Yeah.
So.
And we don't know what might have been presented without going back and reviewing the recordings. I don't know. Okay.
And if on this topic, I did have, if you wanted to pause here for this one, I have a comment from the public.
That's fine, yeah.
Crystal Mellon, if I can just shed some light on this particular consultant. Several years ago, when that study was done, it was done at the behest of Tom Hennig and the then board. And that consultant presented her findings. I attended that meeting. And after that particular meeting, I had a discussion with Tom Hennig about the information that was provided to the consultant. I also had a 2.5 hour long conversation with that consultant. And I think that was probably longer, I could probably take a guess, than any board members had spent with her. I was specifically told by Tom Hennig and that person that it was based on Tom Hennig's representations of where he and the other staff members spent their time. So you're spot on, Director Booth, that there was no rationale other than what Tom Hennig told them, because I specifically told them, hey, as an attorney, I have to keep track of every 6 minutes of my time, and I can tell you where all of my time is spent. And I said, hey, Tom, did you collect any data to see where that time should be spent? And he said, no. So you're right, there was no rationale, which is why I thought it was ridiculous then, and I think it was ridiculous now to rely on any of that. I appreciate your findings on the 23%, and I think if you look at what the rates were prior to that cost increase, you'd find your numbers are more in line with what was there before.
Thank you, Crystal.
You want to talk now?
Sure.
About the cost allocation?
Yeah, it's kind of a conversation. So I'd like to bring up one other issue. I agree with Crystal on how that stuff, I was on the board of 16 and increased after 2016. We took basically a 20% cut on all the department heads, that kind of stuff there. But things have changed in Rancho Marietta that is different now than it was before, and the country club has changed, and it's going to drive everything differently. At one time, when the country club started back in 1971, there's only 25 people that were allowed on the golf course that weren't property owners. That was how they got. That's how everybody paid for their wastewater, because they paid dues to the country club and there was only one owner. Well, that has changed drastically now. So security on the patrol and security on the gates are being burdened by all these people that don't pay taxes in the community or don't pay security fees in the community, don't pay road mitigations. So the country club is averaging pretty close to about $400,000 worth of additional revenue from non-members. So they're not paying a security fee, they're not paying a gate fee. And if you go to Arizona or you go to some states that have water issues, there's a fee to a golf round. There is a water rate fee and a security fee for burdening the gates and that kind of stuff there. I think it's really important that the district starts looking at that. The country club is in the possession of selling the hotel 24 long-term rates, which means you're going to have a lot of tournaments, that kind of stuff. And the country club, they're talking about bundling everything up in one and selling. So that means that, in my opinion, that the gate, non-paying people are going to be using the gate much greater in the future and burdening our resources without paying their fair share. And I think the district, so if you're talking about $19,000 or $50,000, I think there's a way of collecting that money from the people that are using those resources. Thank you very much.
And if I could pause, it's 10:59. We did have the special meeting scheduled for 11 a.m., but I would imagine that most of you are here to roll into the special meeting, which will talk about the security budget. So that will be late.
So, Mimi, what are you asking the committee to do here?
Well, technically, I don't think that the Finance Committee has to bless an indirect cost rate. I think it's something that the staff can do. But I think because this indirect cost rate has been so contentious, I mean, in terms of impacting the overall picture of different resources for different funds, and in particular security, which we'll talk about next, I think we wanted to just bring it to the board's attention. And then it does have a ripple effect on all those other funds, right? So that redistribution of the cost to the other funds is a reality. But I think we just want to have transparency about what we're doing. I don't think I'm looking for any particular direction. If there's any opposition from the board, we'd love to hear about it. If there's any sense that it's inappropriate or it's unduly burdensome on one than the other, I'd love to have a conversation about that. But I
have one concern, and that is if we reduce the the overhead to security. By default, it means the other funds are going to have less money to operate. And if you take this, make the assumption that our budget's perfect and we just covered the exact cost, that means next budget we would have to increase rates for water and sewer, which is not insignificant. And so it may not pass. It may pass. I don't know. But if it doesn't pass, then the budgets of water and security are going to go down, and they may not have enough funds to operate. So it's a real catch-22 from my standpoint. I think it's in the range of $10 a month to the ratepayers.
Yeah, if we do a real back-of-the-napkin kind of calculation on the roughly $350,000 deficit for security, right, as a result of removing that deficit and distributing that cost elsewhere, I think we came up with about $142 per lot per year, which is like divided by 12 months, maybe $12.
Yeah.
So $12 additional would be added on, and that, you know, is, depending upon what you're measuring as a baseline, it could be between 10% and 12%. What did we say, Mark? 10 and 15? I can't
about 13%. Yeah.
15. But that doesn't get us anywhere towards an increase that would actually be dedicated towards, you know, increasing reserves, like actually streamlining the money towards the development of a pot that's for the future expenditures, future needs. But I think that what's compelling to me is the actual plant and operating costs of water. Water is our biggie. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest service we provide. And it is not being charged at even the same level of wastewater. It's less expensive than wastewater right now. And so I do think, even though it would create this additional cost on the water, I think it's an expense that's merited by the volume of activity for water, given that it's our biggest service. I don't really have an answer to that increased cost.
I don't think we have a choice but to examine that. One of the prominent criticisms from the community when Measure R was being debated a couple of years ago was the fact that the administrative allocation to security was unreasonable and was excessive. And when we look at that number, that we're taking back 51% of the operating budget to pay for administrative overhead, when intuitively we all recognize, I believe we all recognize, that security doesn't require that much in terms of central services support compared to the other funds, I think we have to make that choice. The question, I think, then becomes, I mean, clearly for the next fiscal year budget, that'll be a matter that's presented to the board for its approval. You mentioned earlier that we might be able to make that adjustment in this fiscal year, and I believe that would require board action to amend the current year budget to reflect those changes.
That's correct.
I personally favor changing the allocation, and I certainly would give serious consideration to making that a retroactive adjustment for this fiscal year. I think that we can put the story out there whenever we do it, however we do it, to the community. There has been an ongoing clamor over this entire budget year about the reduction of security services, the fact that we're only covering 2/3 of our patrol. And I think if we spend some time crafting communications to our community, demonstrating the adjustments that we've made, really in line with those observations of the community, I I think we can persuade the community to support that, even though it's probably going to mean rate increases in the other funds.
And my only, and I agree with everything you said, my only comment would be that adjusting the indirect cost rate for both fiscal years, 23-24 and 24-25, gets rid of the underlying deficit to the fund, but it doesn't mean more resources are available for staff and operating for security. And that, I think, is the bigger rub for, you know, whatever the needs are for the community for security. I think that's the 11 o'clock topic.
Okay.
So maybe we have that discussion in our special board meeting, yeah. And maybe that gives us an idea of how we should proceed.
So with that, do we have any other comments from the public? Do you have any?
I do not know, sir. I think all our comments have been made public.
Okay. Well, then,
okay.
Does staff have any other comments?
You know, I have one other just note. We did receive our payment on the country club loan for December, and we're grateful for that. Not yet in the bankruptcy court with the country club, so grateful for that. And then I just need like 5 minutes before the special committee would start just because I have to print something out.
That's fine. Steve, do you have any comments?
No, I don't. Thank you, Martin.
Okay, so with that, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Adjourned.